I hope you're wearing something comfortable and you've got snacks. You've gone to the toilet because we're going to have a 3-hour conversation, 3.5-hour conversation about The Irishman, because we need to match the exact length of the movie.
That would be a great challenge, I think. That would be really tough.
Yeah.
But, oh, wow.
I don't know if I'm in for that.
I don't know if I could talk for that long, though I've gotten close in the past. I think my capacity is about 2 hours before I like need to stop in general.
But
and you've witnessed that firsthand when we took that flight to Sydney for work and I explained the entire plot of Naruto to you in 2 hours. From the moment the flight took off to after it landed, I did not miss a beat.
Well, look, I think that's a solid segue into The Irishman, because I think all the episodes lined up for Naruto is about the same length as this movie.
Much like Naruto, the anime, The Irishman is a true epic. An epic saga spanning the life of its titular character.
Oh, man, if Martin Scorsese can do a Naruto movie, I'd be fucking set.
I wasn't planning to go into this making Naruto parallels, but now I wish I did, and I wish I'd prepared notes. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Maybe I'll do some video on, or some shit on that later. That'd be a fun experiment. I've always mused upon making a video essay that's essentially like comparing every story to Naruto in some way. Anyways.
Oh, anyway, welcome to the podcast. We're watching. Welcome.
So now we're talking
about the greatest anime, Irishman.
The Irishman, yep. The 2019 anime straight to Netflix. So where do we begin with The Irishman? It's very long. If you didn't get that from everyone on the internet well as us, it is a very long movie.
I'm loving the memes of like, this is meme that like, got to me where it's just a picture of like multiple Martin Scorsese's and this like with like various funny faces, and it says when you go through The Irishman without taking a break, and I don't know, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, so I guess we can do a little bit of a starting synopsis. So
sure,
The Irishman is based on a novel which is allegedly based on the true story of the life of gangster, what was his name? Frank Sheeran, an Irish Italian American gangster who became involved with the Buffalino crime family in Philadelphia. And essentially, it just follows his life. Without getting into specifics and spoilers, it follows his life. I went into this not knowing really anything about this story at all, without knowing anything about Jimmy Hoffa, who is a very prominent character in this story and in Frank Sheeran's life.
Which interesting, like in the movie, they directly tell the audience that you probably don't know who this is. Like time has forgotten this person.
They do handle that well, and there is a point in the movie where they make reference to the timeliness of it all. But I guess we'll get more into that specifically when we go into spoilers. But yeah, it pretty much follows him from like the 1950s through to like what must be the early 2000s. And just this whole saga, like this is so much. It honestly, watching this movie legitimately, like despite its length, it's really downplayed. Like it's a very low-key, non-cinematic movie. Like there's no big action scenes, no huge like emotional moments. It's all very quiet and for the most part. And I actually was trying to like think of a good way to describe it, and I was reading some like reviews of it, and I found one from Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay.
He described it, the whole movie, as an elegy to the life of Frank Sheeran. And I'm like, that's actually probably the perfect way to explain it. Oh,
that's actually really intentional. That's pretty obvious now that I think about it.
Yeah, I know. It totally is. I did quickly Google to make sure I knew what an elegy was. And I was right. It's defined as a poem, a poem of serious reflection, typically a lament for the dead. And I think that it's just like bang on what this movie is.
I learned that word through, I think it's Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah. No, that Yeah, totally. It's one of those words that I'm like, I don't think if you asked me to explain, give me your definition of it, I'd be able to, but I feel like just in my heart, I just know what it means.
In your heart?
In my heart, I know what the word elegy means, but I cannot explain it to you. I just know. Really, this movie, to me, I saw it as, it's like a portrayal of morality, of mortality through this character study of Frank Sheeran. It's like we are experiencing the key moments of this man's life. And by the end, we've experienced this whole journey with him, like this whole saga of like 50, 60, I don't know how many years it's supposed to pass, but like his life pretty much. A friend of mine I was watching it with after it ended pretty much turned to me and said that he was feeling nostalgic for earlier parts in the movie, which is pretty wild. Like the only other movies I could think of having that effect would be like Lord of the Rings.
I was just about to say, like, the only other movie I can think of that is Lord of the Rings.
It is insane.
And but that's three movies.
That's three movies. Like, the Return of the King Extended Edition is probably the same length as this movie, I think. Yeah, something like that. It's insane. Yeah. But for one movie to fit that all in, it's just, I think this movie is actually like, just masterfully directed, like pretty much on all front. I really like this movie. Like, just to make that point clear, I think it's actually just like, it's kind of a masterpiece. Like, I have really no faults with it. There is like the common criticism I've seen around that there's like no women in this movie, like no prominence of women.
No,
they mean nothing.
I reckon there's three lines in the whole movie.
Yeah. I think,
women.
Yes, that is true, and it's undeniable. I've seen people argue that that's kind of like what women were to these gangsters in this time. They were really just like accessories, and they had no significance in the grand scheme of the scene of the crime, families and stuff. Blah, yada, yada, yada. It is a point. I don't know.
I think it's intentional, though.
Yeah. I think they handle his daughter really well. His oldest daughter, her presence in the movie is really effective.
Okay.
The quiet daughter, who I'm pretty sure has one line.
Yes, I think so. One or two lines.
Yeah, I thought that was quite two. One is a child and then one is like an adult towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But man, what an effective movie. Like me and the boys came out of this one just like, ooh. Like, we just felt like a hit to the heart, like a punch to the gut. Just, it's such an exhaustive journey, a whole spectrum of emotion. It's like quite funny a lot of the time, very somber at other times. It's like this whole spectrum of emotions. It really feels like you're watching an elegy, like you're watching a tribute to a life of a gangster. It's insane.
Okay. That was a very passionate, solid minutes.
That came out a lot less like a ramble than I was expecting. Maybe I'm getting good at this.
So it sounds like you like it a lot more than I do. I came in expecting a masterpiece because there was a lot of hype for this one.
Okay.
I definitely like it. I think it's very good. I don't love it though.
Okay.
I can't fully tell why.
It's a very hard movie to enjoy because it's like, it's zero fun. It's not a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's just very well made and effective, but it's not fun. Like, no. I could say that I didn't enjoy watching the movie, but it's exceptionally well made. Like, it's a weird, I say that with a few movies, but this is kind of one of those. It's just like, it's no fun, but it's really good to me.
So, yeah, I to compare it to some other Scorsese movies, I think that the strongest comparison is to Goodfellas.
Yes.
Similar length. Maybe they're actually an hour off, but Goodfellas is also a long-ass movie.
Yes.
But I think the main difference, and it was a personal preference, main difference between Goodfellas and The Irishman is that Goodfellas has a lot of charisma and zane to it.
Yes.
There's a lot of memorable, wacky scenes where shit just goes down.
Yep.
This one didn't have that, and obviously it was very purposeful, and I really enjoy a lot of aspects into it that I could get much more into later. With almost subverting that expectations for it to be Goodfellas too.
Yes.
This is definitely a much older Martin Scorsese making this movie.
I was just thinking this exact same thing. It really, it feels like you can see how much more mature even Scorsese has become since making Goodfellas. Most of his movies seem to have this problem where they kind of glorify these lives of crime. Like, they make it seem too much fun. I mean, they'll always end with, like, crime doesn't pay. But it's like, you look at Wolf of Wall Street. That's, I think, the worst of this example, where it's just like, you want to be in that, like, fucking mansion partying with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill. They're having, like, the most fun.
Yes.
And, yeah.
But the ending always, like, says,
but in the end, it's like, oh, but they
crime doesn't pay. Yeah.
Yeah. And Goodfellas, to an extent as well. This does not do that.
Yeah. Without going into too much detail. You know what film this actually really reminded me of? And I was getting a lot of flashbacks to. And you know the worst thing about it is I cannot think of the name right now of the movie.
Oh, it's God.
It's an Akira Kurosawa movie. A very fantastic Japanese director. He did Seven Samurai and all the samurai films that everyone knows. So he made a similar movie. I think it's Ran.
I haven't seen it, but I know about it.
But it feels very similar, where he's a very old man at this point, and he makes a movie that's almost like dealing with his own mortality.
It's always interesting seeing filmmakers do that. Even like you look at Ridley Scott, who's just gone completely off the deep end with all this like mortality and like what is life stuff. But yeah.
So Ridley Scott takes the crazy approach. He's having a crisis.
Oh, he's not ready to die. He's older too. He's like 90.
Yeah.
And he's still making like a movie a year, which is very impressive.
Still not unconvinced that Prometheus was secretly his origin story that he tried to tell people.
God damn it.
And that's why he's still alive and able to make movies.
Yeah, he wants to upload himself into a fucking digital body or some shit. He really wants somebody to find that alien tech to give him immortality, but he just knows. You can tell he knows it's not possible deep down.
But he's still trying.
I reckon there's a lot you could psychoanalyze out of the Alien sequels, but that's another. That's an episode for another day, I think.
But yeah. Saying that Ran is very much Akira Kurosawa's mortality. I think Martin Scorsese's is a lot less personal than that. But there's obviously a little bit of that into it, because I don't know how old Scorsese is, to be honest.
I'll Google him real quick. Scorsese, how old is he? He's 77, so he's pretty old.
So like he's old, but he's not that old.
He's not ancient yet.
Sorry to be ageist to Martin Scorsese, but it's just has that same air as Ran to me, which I think is an interesting parallel.
Okay, I've not seen Ran.
I recommend it.
I watched my friend watch it on a plane.
It was on a plane?
Yes, it was on a plane from Japan, I'll say that. We're on our way back from Japan and he watched...
That's also another fucking long movie, so like that's a good movie to watch on the plane.
Yeah, he was watching it for like 3 hours in just dead silence while me and my other friend were watching like the Lego Batman movie. And he just comes out of it after complete silence, he's like, that was awesome.
See, that's the difference. Like, Irishman is Ran... And Goodfellas is the Lego Batman movie.
It all makes sense now. When you put it in a parallel like that.
Look. You know, I'm known to have some poetic insight, you know, with stuff like that. Especially when it comes to Lego Batman.
Especially when it comes to Batman. It's like, your Batman is my Naruto.
Are you sure you want to make... that a thing?
I also want to say on the record that I hate Naruto, but I also love Naruto. It's a real, it's a complicated relationship.
It's an abusive relationship that I've had to inform the authorities multiple times about.
It's why I'm so passionate because I love it as much as I hate it. There's a lot of feelings. I have a similar feeling with Star Wars at the moment. But I'm sure that will come up when we can't go into that now. No, we'll save that for episode 9 or whatever.
Look, maybe we should go into that now. If we're going to do this 3-hour channel.
Star Wars.
No, if we're going to do this 3-hour channel, this is enough filler.
Let's begin.
Naruto, we need to put filler into this podcast.
Let's turn this into like this Venn diagram cross-section with Star Wars on one end, Naruto on the other, and Martin Scorsese's The Irishman in the middle, and see what comes out. Oh God! All right, let's do it. This is going off the rails
really quick.
I like it though.
Just question: did you pause the movie? Did you have a break?
We actually didn't. We went in expecting to take one, and we just didn't. I didn't even need to pee the whole movie. I don't know what happened. I know what's going on with my body.
Are you so engaged that it just like sucked up into you?
I was, and I was watching it with my two housemates and my girlfriend, and fellas, your girlfriend is gonna fall asleep watching this movie. I just gotta say that, a warning. They will.
That's sexist.
I know, but it's happened to me.
Just like Martin Scorsese's script, because it only has 3 lines.
Wow, that was good. That was good. But yeah, and my other housemate, I caught him napping at one stage. And I woke him up. So he had a quick power nap in the middle.
I think that's tactical. Let's be honest. Yeah,
I think it worked, honestly. He woke up and I couldn't say that he missed much because so much happened so slowly in this movie. Like, you could kind of afford to miss like 10 minutes. But yeah. Where was I going with that?
I don't know.
But yeah, no, we were expecting. We had a whole game plan. We were like, we'll take an intermission in the middle, get snacks, you know, toilet break, stuff like that. Just didn't happen. Probably why everyone conked out, but I think, to be honest, if we did have that intermission in the middle, none of us would have made it. Like, I think we would have had to hold off for like a part two.
Really?
But, it's just like such a big movie, having to stop and confront. Like, I didn't even like touch the remote to see how long I had left because I was scared.
Yeah.
We realized when we'd hit a point where a single hour and a half had passed. And we thought there are still 2 hours left in this movie.
Look, like, I think as much as fun as it is to make jokes about the length.
It's very long.
It is very long. I personally don't mind long films. In fact, I really enjoy them.
Yeah, I don't particularly mind it. It's just like you kind of have to plan the night around it. The day around it.
I was like, the only way we're going to get through this with everyone still watching is if I started at 2 p.m.
Yeah, we started at 9.
That's the worst.
That was bad. Like, by the time we all got together and sat down, it was 9. And we realized as we hit play, it's like, it's going to be after midnight on a school night.
On a school night.
Yeah. But somehow, like me, I was like immersed the whole time. I think there was only like one moment where I kind of like lapsed in focus for a minute. And it didn't really matter. But
I'm going to say, even though I don't enjoy it as much as you from the sounds of things, I was never unengaged. Yeah. I think it's very good. I felt the length, but I think everyone who enjoyed it still feels the length in this one. There are some movies that are not quite as long, admittedly, that I don't feel the length with. Like, I don't feel the length with Fellowship of the Ring, for example.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying.
Specifically Fellowship. But this one, even though you are enjoying each and every moment and nothing feels super superfluous, you can still feel the length. That can still be a factor. Yeah.
It's just so much time. Yes. I've seen a lot of people talking about like game plans to like divide it into like 4 hour, like 40 to an hour long chunks. And like, fair, but I also think it's kind of part of the impact to actually experience the whole movie.
Yes, agreed.
Because again, it's like you're living this life alongside the character. Like, by the end, you feel tired, much like Frank Sheeran in the movie. It's like you just feel his exhaustion. You feel everyone's exhaustion. You just want everything to like wrap up nicely and go quietly. But it's just not. It just keeps going. And I guess that's just life.
I think I actually really don't like those game plans. I understand people have busy lives. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it says something about our attention span more than anything that's happening.
It does a little bit of a disrespect to the art form in a way.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason it's not divided. It's because it's not supposed to be. This isn't an album. Like, an album you can pick apart. Like, I know some people like to watch an album full, but their songs are separated, right?
Yeah.
The movie, our scenes aren't separated. And there's no episode 1, 2. This movie doesn't even have, like, a part 1 and part 2. It's more flowing in and out anyway.
Yeah, it.
There is no really real clear distinctions.
You go first.
I actually, now that I think about it, I think there is clearer distinctions than I'm thinking, but it's not super clear cut.
Yeah, I think the kind of disjointed timeline for a large part was a bit confusing. It was kind of just like bouncing around. It doesn't hit until like later in the movie that you're kind of actually getting, you kind of forget for ages that it's him telling this story to you, because it opens with him talking to the camera, telling you the story. And you kind of forget that for a bit until it starts kind of cutting back. But for a while, it just kind of feels like it's zipping around different time periods. But then it starts to all sync together and you start to kind of get the point of it, that it's really just showcasing these dynamics and how they've developed over his life. And on a similar note, the de-aging effects. How did you feel about the de-aging?
I was going to say,
de-aging effects.
How long have we talked about this movie and have not mentioned monster faces?
I don't think monster face is the right word. I thought the effects were all right. They were pretty fine. I actually think they look pretty good.
They are. They're technically pretty good. I'm just not quite there yet.
It's not quite. It's the kind of thing where I think the main thing holding the technology back is actually like Robert De Niro himself. Like, you can't help but not make him look like an old man. It's just the way he's got that old man like body. He's got like the thick neck. He's got like the kind of hunch. Like, the way he moves and walks is like an old man. And the only way to prevent that would be to like Captain America style, like CGI him onto a different body, and that would look really weird and be a lot more effort.
Yeah. I don't think it's just the body. I think it's there's something wrong with the faces. The mouth isn't quite right.
One of the main things that kept bugging me was that we watched Taxi Driver recently, which had an actually like 25-year-old Robert De Niro or something. And, he's supposed to be, I'm assuming, like 30 at the youngest point in this
movie.
I can't tell either. I'm assuming he's supposed to be in his 30s.
Or late 20s, because, like, he's got a family at this stage.
Joe Pesci refers to him as, like, the kid.
Yes.
My housemate laughed at that when he called him the kid, because he looks like a 40-year-old man at the least. He's got old man face. You look at young Robert De Niro, and he doesn't have old man face.
No.
It kind of reminds me of the movie Looper, how there's like Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis, and they make Joseph Gordon-Levitt kind of believably look like he could be a younger version of Bruce Willis.
Maybe.
But the fact that we remember what young Bruce Willis looked like as an audience, we saw Die Hard, we saw like all those early 90s Bruce Willis movies, we know what he looked like, and he didn't look like that.
Why isn't this deepfaked?
Yeah.
Because deepfake has so much better results. And it's cheaper and quick. Some limitation that I'm not aware of?
I think it must have just been the way they wanted to make the movie. Think they just, Scorsese must have just wanted De Niro there. He wanted Joe Pesci there. He wanted the whole gang there.
I understand them having there, but like if you just deepfake the faces instead of CGIing the faces.
Where
it's just using reference images and video from the past of their actual faces rather than 3D modeling it.
Oh, yeah. It must have been a budget thing as well.
Like, I don't know. I think that's cheaper.
I honestly have no idea, actually.
Because a lot of it's using AI programming. And there's a lot less animation involved. Hmm. This is a very limited knowledge of like an animation nerd who doesn't practice, but rather just learns.
Yeah, fair point.
So I could be completely wrong in this. And I've seen other people ask this question as well. I don't know why it's not defaked, because like when I first saw it, I audibly said to my friends, "Oh no," when I saw the face, because it's instantly distracting because it's, you know, it's not the real face, because we know going in that they're going to have these de-aging effects. It was part of the marketing campaign almost. Second, we know that's not what young Robert De Niro looked like at all.
Yeah, not at all.
Third, the technology's not quite there. His mouth doesn't move quite right. You can see sometimes where it's got like sharp mask keyframes in it. Like you can see how it's like, you could sometimes see in the mouth flaps, like we do it at work, where you've got the key point mask, but it's not quite like smoothed out.
Okay, I didn't really notice that. The whole thing looked a bit strange to me.
I think the second major shot that they had these faces in with Joe Pesci leaning into the car, you can see the shadow on his shirt, and it just looks like an After Effects shadow. And the shadow, like, it's not quite right. It doesn't match any of the shadows in the scene. It just stood out to me very much. And I was like, oh, no, this is going to be a problem. Luckily, I think the worst of it's at the start.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, luckily, the younger portion, as, like, a chronicle would go, the younger part ends and then continues on to, like, middle-aged De Niro, which looks fine. They made middle-aged De Niro. He looks pretty good.
In fact, it looks pretty great. Like,
yeah. And what I think the when they, because they kept talking about how they were de-aging everyone, but what they didn't say was that they were also going to age them up.
Mm-hmm.
And like
that looked like makeup though.
I actually don't know. That's actually something I need to look into. But they did a really good job at making the characters look older. Like when you see old characters in the movie, they look old as hell. They look like real old people.
Yes. I think it may be partly CGI, but I believe it looks like makeup.
I'd want to watch a visual effects breakdown on this movie. Out of curiosity.
There is a companion piece on Netflix where the major people talk about the movie. I haven't seen it.
I don't know
what they talk about. Maybe they'll show some. I'll be curious.
I want to have a look at that, because that's interesting.
It is. It's like special features. You remember that when you got them on DVDs?
I miss that. A lot of them were kind of nothing, but I do miss the good ones.
Yes. We don't buy Blu-rays anymore or DVDs. No. We watch them on streaming services.
Yes.
But even if you do buy the Blu-rays, you still don't get special features because no one's doing them anymore.
Yeah. It's sad. I do miss them. I used to watch them a heap when I was a kid.
Yeah. I say I'm going to watch a lot of them, the ones that I do own. I've struggled to find the time, but I appreciate that they're there.
Yeah. Sometimes I would catch myself buying the more expensive edition with all these special features and then never watch them ever.
I know that feel.
That was my signature move back in the day.
Oh, that's a good signature ability. Is that your Naruto ability?
God damn it. but anyways, so de-aging was interesting. Kind of confusing and a little bit distracting, but once you got past the weird young stuff, like them being younger, I think it's fine.
Now that I'm reflecting on it, I just realized how long they had the de-aging effect on.
Yeah, it's like the whole movie, pretty much.
I think I'm giving it two less credit. I just think it's that opening scene, which is really distracting. Oh, the only other middle-aged De Niro, I think, is like 10 out of 10 in terms of technology available now. I think it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
The problem... So, I'm going to backtrack on a lot of what I just said. I was just talking about the opening scene, mostly. So, obviously, it's, like, really good technology. And they did a fantastic job in the middle section of the movie. I was going somewhere. Oh, his eyes. What the fuck do they do to his eyes, though?
Yeah, his eyes are really popping. Like
they saturated his eyes.
I did notice him look
more Irish, but his eyes are so saturated that there's not a blue that exists in nature that can reflect that blue.
You know what blue can reflect that?
Mm.
Have you ever seen Rob Schneider's Netflix series, Real Rob?
No.
They do the same thing to him. They give him the most, like, vibrant blue eyes. I've only seen, like, snippets, like, trailers and stuff, and I heard somebody talk about this, which is why I'm bringing it up now. He has the most, like, vibrant, like, laser blue eyes, which it looks distracting and scary, which is worse than this movie. In this movie, it's just a bit distracting, but it's just a weird effect. Messing with people's eyes is always... It's like one of those uncanny valley kind of things.
I can understand making his eyes blue to make him like look more Irish and like more like the person, whatever, who cares. But
yeah,
just the color they chose was just like so bizarre.
Yeah, it was, I remember
incredibly inconsistent.
Yeah, I remember, I feel like I noticed that deep down because I remember just often getting lost in Robert De Niro's eyes. Like, something's strange here. What's going on?
Anyway, should we head over to Spoiler Town?
In a moment. I think we could talk about one more thing real quick. I reckon just the acting in general. I think the acting is really good. And it's crazy to see, like, Joe Pesci, like, back. Because he was, like, semi-retired. I think me and my housemate were looking him up to see, like, where the hell has Joe Pesci been this whole time? And he's like...
He's been in jail for being a wet bandit.
What? Is that a joke?
That's a Home Alone joke.
Oh, that's right. I forget who's in Home Alone. Because we're looking up his filmography and it was just like nothing. Like, I think he actually low-key retired and like... Because it goes 1998, Lethal Weapon 4, 2006, The Good Shepherd as a cameo, The Love Ranch... In 2010.
What the fuck is The Love Ranch?
I don't know. In 2015, A Warrior's Tale, which is one of those like bootleg animated children's movies that looks weird as hell. A Russian animated film where he plays a mosquito. And then The Irishman. He makes a movie every like 4 or 5 years. He must be retired. But like at that stage where it's like you throw enough money at him or like get all of his friends involved, like I'm sure Scorsese did. And he'll be like, you know what? I'll come back. Oh my god, what the hell is this Warrior's Tale movie? Anyways, I'll link this to you later.
The Love Ranch.
Oh, The Love Ranch. Looks like a sexy movie. Helen Mirren's in it. What the hell? What the heck is this?
I would love to see a sexy movie featuring a 70-year-old Joe Pesci.
Oh, this got bad reviews. Why is Helen Mirren in this?
Jesus, okay. Next week's episode, tune in for The Love Ranch.
Love Ranch. We're doing it. We're finally... Everybody who's been talking about The Love Ranch... And no, it's not The Love Ranch. It's just Love Ranch.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, my God.
It was inevitable.
Love Ranch had a $25 million budget and made
$137,000.
Yikes. Yeah, nice. Wonder what the story is there. Anyways... But yeah, great to see Joe Pesci again, especially because he was really good.
Incredible.
It was interesting seeing him. I'm assuming it was like not just he looks old, but like, was he, his character was older than Robert De Niro's character. And so
good 20 years.
Yeah. So there were like points where he was aged up and Robert De Niro was aged down, which is a really bizarre effect. Like, what are they going to do with actors next besides, like, bring back the dead as CGI, which they're, like, you can tell there's people in Hollywood scrambling to try and do. But
isn't a movie featuring James Dean coming out next year?
Oh, fuck. You're right. They're going to do that. It's going to happen. It's a matter of time. But, like, it's interesting to see what other weird stuff they could do with actors just within this digital age. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. But yeah, Robert De Niro, also great. It's always great to see Robert De Niro, like, trying, doing a legit performance he really is actually putting effort into. That's great to see.
When was the last time we saw Robert De Niro try?
I'm going to dig it up. I got a lot of Wikipedia tabs open today.
Arguably.
I'd say Meet the Fockers was when he discovered his, like, status quo, like, his default like Samuel L. Jackson has one, Al Pacino has one, like all these old actors, they all have this default character that's like, I'm just going to play this guy. And I'm sure that they get cast in movies because they're like, play this guy. Because you're Samuel L. Jackson, you can do the Samuel L. Jackson thing. And so that's why there's all these Samuel L. Jackson movies where he's just this plain character.
Mm-hmm.
The same character, I mean.
When you're talking about Samuel L. Jackson's default character, you're talking about Mace Windu?
I'm talking about pretty much most of the characters he's played.
Oh, sorry. Do you mean everyone else but Mace Windu?
Maybe. Oh God! What was?
Why was he cast as that character? Anyway, that's a completely different story. Look,
Samuel L. Jackson's cool. I like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, I know, but he's not.
No disrespect to Samuel L. Jackson. I've seen him do some really interesting characters lately. I just don't like that he keeps getting typecast as Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, agree.
Same thing. Same effect to Robert De Niro and all these older actors.
Mm-hmm.
God, I don't even know what the last movie Robert De Niro tried in was. There's a lot of movies here. Oh, he was in Joker.
I
forgot he was in Joker. He was pretty good in Joker.
Yeah, no, that was the last movie he tried in earlier this year.
How much older is Joe Pesci? Just on a side note. So Robert De Niro is 76.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Pesci also 76. That makes it easier to like wrap my head around.
Wait, they're the same age?
They're the same age.
Look, I haven't seen, because I don't think Joe Pesci, you don't see Joe Pesci in this movie without the de-aging.
Yeah, you don't. You don't see
without the up-aging. So you see one scene of de-aging at the start.
Yep.
Oh, maybe in the mid-section he's less de-aged.
I honestly can't remember. A lot happened in that movie.
Yeah. See, there's a problem talking about this movie is because there's a lot to process. A good 3.5 hours to process.
Okay, I just discovered something.
What's that?
The director of Love Ranch. I decided to give him a quick look while I was scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Hackford is his name. He also directed Ray, a movie about... Oh, God, what was his name? Ray Charles, the musician, won Academy Award for Best Director and Best Picture. The Devil's Advocate, a bunch of movies that have got, like, Directors Guild nominations, Academy Award nominations. He's a multi-Academy Award winner. He's made a Stephen King movie in the 90s.
What the fuck happened?
Why did he make Love Ranch? This is more interesting. I'm genuinely interested in Love Ranch now.
Oh, God.
What the hell is this movie? Anyways, The Irishman.
Yes.
Good to see his acting. Al Pacino, his character was really funny. He played Jim Hoffa. He was just... His character, I would refuse... He's the kind of guy who's just like, I will never shut up. Like, I will never shut the fuck up. You cannot stop me from shutting the fuck... Like... He's so high energy. Like, I wish I knew more about Jimmy Hoffa.
So, here's an interesting thing. There was a movie in the 90s, I believe, called Hoffa.
Oh, gosh. So,
is this part of the cinematic universe?
Oh, so, yeah, we were talking about that, weren't we?
Yeah. So, I think Jack Nicholson's in Hoffa.
Ooh, I'm going to look this up if I can find it. Portrayals in the media. He's played by Sylvester Stallone. A character based on Sylvester Stallone. Oh, wow. What the hell are all these movies I'm founding?
You wouldn't believe who directed the 90s Hoffa.
Oh, I just found it. Let me have a look. What? Okay. You know what's weird? Just the other day, we were just sitting around. It was like on the weekend. We had nothing to do.
Oh, to clarify for anyone else not curious and Googling. The director is Danny DeVito.
The director is Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito. And written by David Mamet, who's like a really prestigious playwright.
Starring Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito.
Fuck, this movie was this a good movie?
I don't know.
I only got like middling reviews.
Okay.
I got Oscar nominations, I guess, but I feel like...
Well, it was based on a real story, so of course I got Oscar nominations.
Got a few bad... No, I got a few Razzie nominations.
Do you reckon Irishman has some... It will get some awards.
Everyone reckons it will, but who fucking knows? Like...
Again, streaming snubs.
There's so much weird stigma in the air. People forget about movies. People forget about stuff. I hope he gets something. Maybe it'll get a director nomination.
Ironically, you'll probably get a special effects nom.
I don't know. Who knows? There's been so many weird movies this year. Like, who knows what it's going to get nominated for? I hope it does, but I hope it gets at least a mention.
Mention, I reckon.
Oh, yeah.
And potentially Robert De Niro.
That'd be good.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it'd be great to see the whole cast get nominations. Just like an old guard getting like a nice thing.
Actually, Al Pacino in supporting probably could win it.
He was really good. He was really good. Joe Pesci was also really good. Robert De Niro. They're all really good.
I think Al Pacino sort of steals the show, though.
Yeah, he does really well. He probably is
the best character.
Like, you see his character and you understand why he's such a deal just from the sheer energy he exudes. Like, you can understand why this man is such a, like, political figure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And, like, such a leader in that space of, like, that union space in the 70s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can believe it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think it's time to go to Spoiler Town.
Okay. Where to begin with spoilers?
Where do we begin? I guess we'll just go through more of the story. So pretty much.
Yeah, can you remind me? Because like,
let me try and
yeah, okay.
Summarizes the events of this movie.
Red pill me about the Irishman.
All right. So Robert De Niro's character Frank is like a trucker. He works for delivering meat, and eventually, kind of, he must figure out. It's kind of done in a way that went a little bit over my head, and I had to think about it. But I guess the impression is he figures out he can make a lot of money importing beef and stealing beef for the mafia, like for the crime families.
So, and I think what he was doing was that he was taking meat from other shipments as well.
Yeah, and he was playing it off like he had nothing to do with it, but he was getting like extra stock for the for these guys in the crime family.
So he was fudging the numbers by doing tricks in the system, which would avoid suspicion.
Yes.
Eventually, until one day he gives them his whole truck and like the whole meat in the truck, and they open it and like there's no.
Yeah, and he's just like, I just destroyed.
Well, I don't know. Where'd it go? I just deliver it. I don't check.
Yeah. But so essentially, he makes good with the Bufalini crime family.
The Buffalo family.
And essentially, as the movie goes on, we slowly just kind of get the grasp that he's really just loyal, trustworthy guy. Like
he's also a Nam vet.
He's a Vietnam veteran.
Oh, no, he's not Vietnam. No. World War II.
World War II. We're World War II veteran. And which gets him a lot of respect. It's why he knows Italian. And it just follows essentially his experience working with various members and kind of working his way up in this crime family. And just slowly everyone starts to realize he's just a really reliable dude. And he sticks around and everybody likes him. And he gets bounced around between kind of different jobs throughout his life. And before eventually essentially getting assigned as like the right-hand man of Jimmy Hoffa.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he gets buddy-buddy with Joe Pesci and eventually gets the gig as like Jimmy Hoffa's right-hand man and bodyguard, essentially. Bodyguard initially, right-hand man after.
Yes.
But one thing to not to overlook, I think, is that montage on the bridge is in between.
Oh, that was good. Yeah,
see, this is my favorite scene in the movie.
That was really good. That was one of the funner scenes in the movie as well.
You don't see him. You see him do one hit. He ends up in a situation where he actually has to do a hit because he's fucked up.
Yeah.
Because before then, he's just doing like busy work and like enforcing, but never like murder.
Yeah.
So he gets into a situation where he got selfish and fucked over someone.
It wasn't necessarily him. It was one of his. I think it was presumably.
He got tricked into this situation, but he should have known better. Yeah. Is essentially the idea. They don't take it super personally, but they're like, you have to deal with it though. You make it right. And he does by killing this snitch. not a snitch, but like a traitor.
Yeah, he tried to screw over his own like people for money.
Yes.
Eventually.
Well, yeah.
Like the guy who hires Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro just assumes that, like, he tells him that it's like the Jewish mafia owns this one place, this one like laundry, like literally laundry, but it's also for money laundering. Like warehouse that are, and they tell him to, he asks Robert De Niro to destroy it and he'll pay him for it. And Robert De Niro's like, oh, you know, sure, okay, I can do that. And then he gets pulled over shortly beforehand by Joe Pesci and gang. And Joe Pesci is like, he's kind of like the boss. He's like the Don. He's like the one of the more older veteran members. Everyone listens to him. He's like the daddy of the crime family.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much pulls him aside and just quietly tells him, like, we own that factory. We own that other laundromat by burning it down.
Not him, but Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel, yeah. Harvey Keitel, who's one of them, another higher tier one, I gather, owns it.
I got the impression it was like a friend. Like, I don't think they're part of the same family. They're like allies.
Yeah, it's like allies, yeah.
Yeah.
He owns it, and if he destroys it, it's like, that's bad. That would be a big mess, and it's also betraying their own trust. But they catch him before he does it and tell him what's happened. And there's a few good scenes in this movie where Robert De Niro is forced to explain something to his superiors. And it's really clear that he doesn't want to do it out of loyalty, but he does out of like a greater loyalty to these people. Like he doesn't want to snitch, but he will out of like respect and loyalty. There's a couple scenes in the movie where that kind of thing happens, where it's like he's forced to tell another character something that he doesn't want to, but he has to because it needs to be said kind of thing. It's a few times. Anyway, but it really reflects, I think the Frank character is very good. I think they handle him really well, yes. But I'll get a bit more into that.
But going back to the bridge though, so like because he starts, he has to do this hit. He eventually becomes like a regular hitman.
Yes.
And there's this scene, like I was saying, this isn't Goodfellas, where like, you know, it's like a lot of like zany comedic characters, almost like they're crazy. And then it ends in like, there's moments of like explosive, visceral violence.
Yes.
This does not have that. The most violent scene is a beatdown. And it's shot super wide and coldly. Yeah.
Every action, every like violent scene pretty much is. It's shot like real life. Like yes. It's usually one take. It's usually
when Robert De Niro does his first kill, it's just he walks up, goes pop, pop twice with a gun and walks away. It's not like there's no crazy blood spurts. It's just very static. It's very cold. It's very clinical.
Yeah, that's what I said before. The whole movie is very downplayed and non-cinematic. But yeah.
It's sort of like that's opposite to a lot of Scorsese movies. And to further prove this point is that he does this whole montage where he just implies that he does all these killings and we don't see a single thing of it. There's no bloodlust here in the film. It's him just throwing guns into this river that's known for just getting rid of armed weaponry.
Yeah.
And it's just this montage and it's over and over and over again. And it's incredible.
That was
best scene in the movie.
Good scene. Such a good scene.
And it sets the tone perfectly of what kind of gangster movie this is. This isn't a bloodbath gangster movie.
Yeah,
it isn't
about
much more thematic and reserved gangster movie.
It's not about the violence. It's not about the feuds. It's just about what this character.
It's just about old men.
It's just about Frank and what he does for the family.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and as the story goes on, he gets assigned to help Jimmy Hoffa, becomes good friends with him.
Who is the union leader.
Yeah, who was a big union leader in this huge movement around JFK era America, where he was like fighting off the big corporations, and he was very respected, very political, very controversial figure as well, in and out of prison due to like scandals and getting framed and stuff. Like he was in this ongoing battle with the American system, and
for good reason.
Yeah, and like Well, he was doing good stuff with the union. He is, like, kind of a thug, undeniably.
Oh.
Which is a criticism my girlfriend had, because she's very pro-unions, that she wasn't happy that they portrayed the union as, like, kind of gangsters.
Well, that's what happened in America. But that's essentially what happened to the union system in America, and why they don't really have them. In Australia, they're trying to constantly dismantle our unions, but we're like, no, please don't.
Please don't. But yeah. And then as it goes on, time passes, and Jimmy Hoffa pretty much starts to get in the way of the crime family, the Bufalini family. And it kind of hits this boiling point where he's riding on this mantle of, like, taking down the crime families to get reelected to his, like, president of the unions, which clashes with his supporters, who is that crime family. And they pretty much hit a point where it's like, you need to stop or else. And you can tell they're very reluctant in sending that message. And the whole portrayal of them trying to give that message to him through Robert De Niro is really, like, it's a heartbreaking secret. Because, you can tell Robert De Niro really doesn't want to. He really wants him to just sit down, you know, like, to shut the fuck up and calm down. And Al Pacino is just like, I will never shut the fuck up.
Yeah, there's a mixture of, like, Al Pacino will never shut the fuck up and Robert De Niro being such a quiet man.
Yeah.
Who doesn't, like, assert his authority over anyone, especially not someone like that.
Yeah. And eventually, it hits a point where the family's like, we have to kill him. We have to take him out. We just have to.
I think it's a good moment to talk about one of my favorite aspects of this movie and why it's a little hard to follow at times, is they use gangster talk. And it's not quite clear what a lot of the metaphors they're saying really means. There's a lot of, like, metaphors getting thrown around, and people will talk a metaphor like, hey, this is what's going to happen. And they'll refer to a different metaphor back. And you're like, actually, what the fuck are they saying? Is it actually really simple and I'm following it? Or are they actually talking about something far more complex?
Look, this is much like me considering the word elegy, in that I know in my heart what they're talking about, but I wouldn't be able to explain it. I can get the mood. I can pick it up, but I can't. Like, I don't know what these. Yeah. The gangster talk's fun. It's a lot of fun, that kind of gangster talk. Nobody does it quite like Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And as the story goes on, they decide they have to take out Hoffa. Hoffa, who seems really on edge about it as well. Like, he kind of gets the impression that he kind of is on edge all the time because he has so many enemies, which then plays into, like, a lengthy sequence of the movie and actually kind of like what the whole frame narrative was about, which was this road trip that Robert De Niro was going on with Joe Pesci and their wives, which was earlier in the movie, you got the impression they were just traveling to pick up the money laundered through their various businesses, check in with the various businesses they own. But it was that, but they were also secretly en route for this assassination plan where they send Robert De Niro. They drive to this one point in the middle of the day, send Robert De Niro across the country on a secret jet. He lands, meets up with Jimmy Hoffa, and kills him. And then his people take away the body. He gets taken back to the plane, flown back. So it's like, they'll never be able to place him. Stuff like that. Like, it was just like a full-blown, proper, real-deal political assassination. And and Robert De Niro had to do it because he was the only person he trusted. And it's just this really sad... It's just really sad to see, and you can tell how much his character just takes that one, I think. Like, that, how much that hurts him. And he's a very quiet and reserved character, Robert De Niro's Frank Sheeran. But, like, I remember there being a line that Al Pacino's character, that Jimmy Hoffa, Al Pacino's character, says, which, when they're talking about his second-in-command, Fitz, who then later goes on to become, like, a political adversary, but he describes him as, he's not bright, he's not the smartest guy, but he's trustworthy and you can trust him not to stab you in the back. And pretty much that's what Frank Sheeran is. That's what Robert De Niro's character is in the whole movie. He's functionally just a really reliable goon of this crime family. Like, he's almost like a weird OC. Like, he's the kind of character that he doesn't make a single mistake. Everybody loves him. He always knows what to say. He always does the right thing and everything works out in the end. Oh, not in this case, but that kind of like OC original creation character, like Mary Sue kind of character. And that technically is true in this case, but it doesn't pay off in the end. In the end, it kind of, it's sad because...
Yeah, he has to kill his best friend.
He has to kill his best friend. And even and then after that, things quiet down. Everyone pretty much retires. They all, in the aftermath of it, they pretty much all get arrested, but for like various other things. Like Frank, it seems like does. Frank got arrested. They all get, there was a portion where they're all in prison.
Was there?
Yeah.
I forgot. Did I fall asleep?
Maybe you fell asleep.
No, I didn't. I definitely didn't.
There's a whole saga after Jimmy Hoffa's assassination, which I didn't actually realize. Like, I Googled Jimmy Hoffa after, and he actually just vanished. That's what happened to him.
They never found the corpse. So he was labeled missing
for decades. Yeah, and then they just decreed him dead in absentia later. But the whole pull of this story, like the story of Frank Sheeran based on the book, is that he came out in the early 2000s claiming, or maybe the 90s, claiming that it was him who killed Jim Hoffa. And that's pretty much the entire basis of the story.
And there's a lot of theories that he was lying a lot.
Yeah. But again, it's just, we'll not get into that here because it's not the point of the story.
And I don't know enough to really say.
And again, we grew up in suburban Australia in the like late 90s. So we had no, this Jimmy Hoffa stuff happened like in the 70s, like ancient history, American specifically.
That's for boomers.
That's for boomers. That's genuinely for boomers. I doubt even my parents know much about it. but yeah, and pretty much they all get arrested because I get the impression that like they knew they did it, but they couldn't pin him. So they like, just would get them arrested for various other things. Like, they just tried to get them for something.
I genuinely don't remember Frank going to jail.
They all did. The whole squad did. And they were really old. Frank got sent to prison.
Oh, my God.
For his car, which he was given as a gift.
Holy shit.
Because they considered it a bribe.
That whole scene was really good. I have no memory of it until just now.
Yeah. So, they all go to prison. Oh, they get arrested for various different things. Most of them, and it's really sad because you just
see Joe Pesci dies in prison.
Joe Pesci, you see his character starting to go senile and just he's so frail and old. He doesn't have teeth and like he's in a wheelchair and he just dies one day. And it's like non-dramatic. He just gets wheeled off and that was the last time we saw him. And then eventually he gets let out. I think he gets let out. He was in prison. He was sentenced to 30 years, Frank. But then he got out in like 18 and then his wife died shortly after.
Yeah.
And then he was just him alone as an old man and his daughters he's terrified of him.
He's the last one alive.
Yeah. His daughters were all terrified of him. He has no friends anymore. There's a really confronting scene, which it pretty much ends the movie on, which is the FBI agents come up to him. There's these young FBI agents who you've never seen before. And they're like, look, and he's like, can you just tell us what happened? Like, it's been so long. Can you just tell us? His family wants to know. It's been like 30 years. They just want to know what happened to their like father and husband. And he's like, I can't say. I'd need to refer you to my lawyer. And the agents are like, he's dead. And he to which Robert De Niro has a really good response. He's like, what? Who got him? Like, it's a reflex. And it's like, he died of cancer. But the reflex for him to go like, oh, who got him? It's like a typical gangster kind of like, that's how he expects people to die. Even in his old age, there's a part of him that's how he processes like death, essentially. So having somebody dying is like, oh, they must have been killed by somebody.
Mm.
It's like a funny but also sad moment. And then they go on to say, everyone's dead. Like the bosses are dead. The lawyers are all dead. Anybody involved in his time have all died and he's the last one.
Mm.
Like nothing. And he still can't give it up. He still like keeps his mouth shut. He still like doesn't snitch. He just has that loyalty. Just that's what I said before. He's just like the most loyal goon. He just can't let it go, even though he is on his deathbed and like, there, nothing will come from him keeping the secret. He's just too loyal. And that loyalty kind of just, like, cost him, like, he has nothing now. Like, he was so reliable and trustworthy and smart and loyal that he made it to the end, unlike everybody else. But now he has nothing, like, not even his family. Like, his daughters are scared of him. And he's just alone. And he doesn't even, like, believe in religion. Like, there's him talking to the Catholic priest. And the priest is like, do you feel any, like, empathy or remorse for anything he did? And he's like, no.
That priest character was really interesting to me because he appears in just one or two scenes. And I get the impression, and it just might be me, that he was, all, like, a fan of this mystery. And he was kind of trying to get, like, a maybe. Scoop. He's just, like, but, like, a bit of a nerd to it. Yeah. Like, there's some... He was obviously pretty intimidated by the Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Because he very just young. He knows being, what he's done. Everyone knew what he did.
Everyone knows. Him being very young, the priest was like, he looked like he was in his 20s. And the nurse was like a young woman as well. And she had no idea who Jimmy Hoffa was, which is a really good moment, which we referenced earlier with them, how they take into play that the whole Jimmy Hoffa saga in history and how even by the end of the movie, he's showing a photo of his daughter with Jimmy Hoffa to the nurse. And he goes, do you know who that is? And she goes, no. And he goes, that's Jimmy Hoffa. And she's just like, I still don't know who that is. And he's just like, oh, man, time goes fast. Like, fuck. God damn, man. That just is such a gut punch. Like, all this whole saga, this whole him killing his friend, him going through all this stuff just means nothing. It's just swept, like, dust in the wind. Still there. And there's even that line where the priest is like, yeah, do you feel any remorse? Do you feel any guilt or sadness? And he's just like, I genuinely don't. I would do it again if, like, if I was in the position I was in. Like, I don't regret anything I did.
Which makes him very,
it's like, well, maybe just pray to God and say, dear God, I'm sorry. Amen. And here's a response, like, what kind of phone call is that? Which is such a great line, I think. Like, just, like, imagine making a prayer, like, doing a prayer that's just, like, sorry for nothing. And then he's just sitting, the last shot in the movie is just him sitting alone in his room, and the priest is like, oh, I'll be back after the Christmas break. And he's just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just wait then.
I'll just chill and watch Naruto.
And the last shot is just him watching Naruto, and episode 1 of Naruto is
the end.
So
this movie is really good and has a lot of good elements in it, so much so that while you were giving the synopsis, I just remembered all this stuff I wanted to mention at the start, but there's just way too fucking much to mention.
There's so much.
So one of my favorite elements of this movie is a classic Scorsese. He really knows how to use text in movies, and, like,
oh yeah,
and just whenever a character is introduced, one of the major characters in the family, it has a little text under.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. It's one of the most Scorsese things in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't mention it until now.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
So when a major crime character, most of them are introduced, you'll have a little thing at the bottom telling them how they died and when.
And all of them are, like, shot 3 times in the head in 1979. Like, all of them.
Yeah, you're meeting all these characters and you're already knowing that those characters are going to die. And how? Yeah.
But it
most of them, it's inconsequential. But it's so fascinating because it really shows
how
violent it really was. But there's one guy who says, liked by everyone, died of natural causes.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Oh, it's so good. It's almost out of place, but I love it. But again, it really does accentuate that whole cycle of life and mortality. And if you think about it, most of those characters, it's how they died, is shot in the back of the head. Like, shot 3 times in the back of the head, just dead. That's how most of the characters in the movie die as well.
Like,
that's just how Robert De Niro, all the kills Robert De Niro does, there's like 3 big kills and it's just like pop up and then he just walks out. Like, in the blink of an eye, it's over.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to all of them, I guess. That's just must have been how it ended for a lot of these gangsters.
Well, I mean, it's effective, clearly.
Man, I guess it is.
So man. Can we talk, like, we touched on it, but there's the whole daughter subplot. So she's probably one of the main characters, even though she doesn't get much to do. A lot of time is devoted to how her relationship is with the character. So the main daughter character, she's scared of Frank because early on in the movie, she's like, my part-time job, I got shoved by the grocery store owner because I wasn't doing a very good job. And he just goes and fucking obviously 80-year-old body
beats the shit out of him. Like, mauls him. Like,
but, like, that scene is unfortunately really awkward because you can tell it's an 80-year-old body doing it. Even though he's supposed to be like 40, he's struggling. But whatevs. Ever since then, she knows what he is. She doesn't
never talks. She doesn't talk to him. She doesn't talk to any of his friends. Like, Joe Pesci keeps trying to, like, befriend her, and she,
which is really, it comes off really weird sometimes. I understand what they're going for, but sometimes it's just a bit weird. Joe Pesci's constantly trying to buy her affection, kind of like just to be in her good books.
Yeah.
But she senses the same thing she senses from her father, from him. She just doesn't like these gangsters. She's a very sensitive kid. But then Jimmy Hoffa comes into their life, and she loves Jimmy Hoffa.
Yep.
Even though he's the same shit they are.
There's something a bit different about him.
He's charismatic. And she loves Jimmy Hoffa for some reason, and which just makes the punch. And the general reason why she's such a character in this is so when Robert De Niro has to kill Jimmy Hoffa, like, it's a big deal because it's, you know, it's a bigger riff between him and her. I don't know why they chose her to play the character, though, because most of the movie, she's a high schooler, but she's played by fucking Rogue from X-Men.
Yeah, Anna Paquin. Yeah, well,
and she grew up. It's just like she spends most of the time as like a teenager in the movie, and you see her walk into frame dressed as a teenager, and you're like, oh no, that's Rogue. She was a teenager in the 2000s. She doesn't. It doesn't look right, and it's very awkward. I guess the idea was, you know, so it looks right when she's an older woman. But you see her for all of 2 seconds as an older woman. So I'm not 100% on that decision. It would be much easier to have a younger character and age them up.
Yeah. I guess they're like, they were already de-aging everyone. Like, they may as well. I don't know. See, I didn't notice it that much. But I didn't realize it was Anna Paquin until, like, it was adult Anna Paquin. I was like, oh, that is her. I just sort of like, she looks familiar when I first saw her.
Yeah, it was very distracting when I noticed it, though.
Man, so much. There's just so much in this movie. Like, I think I'm, like, out of stuff to say. Like, I'm not sure what else I even can say because there's just so much.
It's very dense.
There's so much, like, that goes against the typical Scorsese brand and the whole gangster. It's just such a really interesting, mature gangster movie.
That's the thing. You hit it on the head. It's a mature gangster film. It feels like a reflective movie on Scorsese's whole career. I don't think he's saying his other films were like childish or bad or anything, but this is now the gangster movie he makes. Because he hasn't made one for a very long time.
Yeah, he hasn't.
His shtick. But since The Departed, I think he's everywhere, you know? He does a lot of things.
Yeah, he's been really bouncing around lately. He's been doing a lot of, like, other kind of genres. He did Hugo. He did, what's it called? The
Shutter Island.
He did Silence. He's just trying all these different... Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
He's just kind of doing whatever. He's lent away from gangsters and moved much more into just like character pieces.
That's what he's really good at.
Yeah. That's fundamentally his strength.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah. It's a good movie. It makes me want to go back now. even just thinking about it, man, remembering how much happened, trying to recount it. It's just like, woof.
But a worthwhile experience, I think most people should go through. I think it's like a rite of passage as a movie fan to see this movie.
I think if you're a fan of Scorsese, if you're a fan of the gangster saga movies like Goodfellas or The Godfather, this is really like this is for you.
This, you know what film this actually really reminds me of other than Ran? This is, oh god, why am I bad? Unforgiven. Happened? The Unforgiven.
I've not seen that
movie. So the idea of that one is it's the end of the era Western movie. Yes. Where everyone is old, the West is ugly, it's no longer painted in such a positive black and white light.
Yes.
This is it's the same movie because it's like this, it's the same idea rather. It's not the same movie. Yeah.
There's a few of those. There's the
star of that genre now is older, reflected, making a much more mature, a much more morally obvious movie.
Yeah. There's so many Death of the West movies, but there's really not many like Death of the Gangster movies. I mean, actually there's probably heaps. I just haven't seen many of them. I haven't seen as many as I have Death of the West movies.
Yes.
But
it's a smaller genre to begin with.
Yeah. It's again, like when we what movie did we talk about last time?
The King.
The King, yeah. Like The King, it's just been so long since I've watched a proper gangster movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of refreshing. The King's not a gangster movie. When we were watching The King, I said it's been such a long time since I've seen, like, a Shakespearean medieval period film.
There's been a couple gangster movies around, but they look like cheap garbage. There was, like, Gangster Squad.
Oh, that looks so shit. There was something Into the Night or something, or The Night, I don't know, something to do with The Night. Ben Affleck was in it.
Yes, there was that one. There was also,
I feel like Ben Affleck's in a lot of them.
Yes. There was also a Prohibition one.
There's been a couple around, but
I saw the trailer for every single one of them, and I'm like, nah.
I'm looking through now, like, best gangster movies of, like, the years. So far, I'm not seeing any good ones. I saw Jared Leto again in one of them. And it's going to lead me back to Jared Leto Joker. So I'm going to... The Outsider on Netflix starring Jared Leto in 2018 is apparently a gangster movie. That's all I'll say. That movie's about Jared Leto, a white man going to Japan and becoming a Yakuza member. I haven't seen it, but it sounds bad.
Oh, that sounds really bad.
You know, it's technically gangster movies.
Let's watch it.
You know that is going to be me talking about Jared Leto Joker the whole time. But back on track. Technically, John Wick is a gangster movie.
Oh.
That's more of a gangster movie than a...
No, that's a gangster setting.
More of an action movie than a gangster movie.
Yeah.
Live by Night, that's the movie that I will never watch with Ben Affleck. Why? There's none. Black Mass.
There was also that
Johnny
one.
Depp. There was a push a couple of years ago. In 2015, there were a few. Black Mass, Legend. Okay, now that's it.
There was one with Tom Hardy.
Yeah, Legend. That was the two Tom Hardys.
Why were they all named like awful titles?
Why? Are they legends when they're gangs? I don't know. Remember the Black Mass movie with Johnny Depp playing like this iconic gangster and he went like full old man. He went this weird
Black Mass. Yeah.
And apparently the consensus I heard from that movie is Johnny Depp is pretty good, but Joel Edgerton steals the show. And I looked it up. Joel Edgerton isn't even like on the poster and he just plays like an FBI agent. And the fact that he steals the show as like a generic FBI agent to Johnny Depp playing this eccentric gangster, like murderous man, is really funny to me.
Yes.
The fact that they clearly made it to highlight Johnny Depp. And Joel Edgerton just stole the movie, which is what he does. I love Joel Edgerton. He's so good.
He keeps coming up.
I wish Joel Edgerton was in every movie.
Hey, Joel Edgerton, if you're listening, come on.
He's one of the good ones.
Mitch won't be able to speak because you'd be so starstruck.
Yeah, I'll just be dead silent. Joel Edgerton will play me and do my voice perfectly, won't even notice that it's not me. But it's actually Joel Edgerton.
He would steal the show as well.
And he would do a way better episode than me, than I ever could.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
I'm not disagreeing at all.
I think that's a good note to wrap up The Irishman on.
I think a better note is this production photo that I saw of behind the scenes of The Irishman, where it's Robert De Niro in like platform shoes.
Oh, I saw that.
And Al Pacino in an oversized coat to get like the proportions right for the shot. Oh. That shot by itself is so fucking funny to me.
I'm seeing that.
The longer you look at it, the funnier it gets. See if you can find it.
Send it to me and post, if you can remember, post it on the YouTube video just for a second. Just that picture.
Mm.
Look at those shoes. I remember hearing that they gave him platform shoes because the character was like supposed to be taller than everyone.
Mm.
Oh man.
Image is so funny to me. Also, what do you think? Like, there's two more topics I want to bring up before we fully wrap up. The alternate title I prefer better than The Irishman.
Oh yeah, I was going to bring this up as well. The I Heard You Paint Houses, or I Hear You Paint Houses,
which is the name of the book.
That's such a good name.
When I saw that flash up, and it's obvious that I think either the editor or Scorsese really wanted that title to be it. So they put it in the movie, even though it's not called the movie.
Yeah.
it's not even a subtitle of the movie.
It's just in the title credits. Yeah. I heard you paint houses is such a good name.
Much better title. Where does this stand in terms of Scorsese's filmography to you?
Is this
top tier Scorsese for you?
I don't know, but it's very good. Every Scorsese movie is like that I've seen has been legitimately outstanding, except for Hugo, which I didn't care much for.
I really liked Hugo.
Hugo was good, but I just kind of forgot it. Actually, no, Hugo was good. I'm forgetting what happened in that movie too. The whole like film.
That's also like film 7 hours long or something.
Yes. See, I haven't seen a lot. I've seen a bunch of Scorsese movies, but I haven't seen a few of the big ones.
Yeah, so there are some holes in my...
Now that I look at it, I've seen Taxi Driver, I've seen Goodfellas, I've seen Gangs of New York, Aviator, Departed, Shutter Island, Hugo, Wolf of Wall Street, Silence, and Scorsese. But I've missed, like, I haven't seen The Last Temptation of Christ, Raging Bull, The King of Comedy, Cape Fear... There's a lot I've missed so I can't really give a proper consensus.
Yeah, okay, fair.
So I've missed some of these.
I've seen less than you, ironically. I've seen Raging Bull, but I haven't seen Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York's really fun.
Or The Aviator.
Gangs of New York is a really good movie.
I need to check
Daniel
it out.
Daniel Day-Lewis, I think he won Best Supporting Actor for it, and he's really good. It's one of those like classic Scorsese, like poppy fun kind of gangster, but period piece movie kind of things. Because it's about like... it's about gangsters in, like, what year? Like, the 1800s New York.
Mm.
It's cool. It's awesome. And Daniel Day-Lewis is really good in it.
It's definitely on my list, man. Now that I say it, I thought I would have a clearer answer. It's not top tier for me in terms of a Scorsese movie. The top tier ones for me personally is Silence and Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
Ironically, two of his more recent ones, but I really, really dig those movies. I've seen them multiple times.
All right.
I also really like Goodfellas, and I really like Taxi Driver, but those are the two top tier, and Irishman doesn't quite come close to...
I have a thing with the Scorsese movies I've seen. There's the ones that feel like the Scorsese brand, that have that energy, like that Goodfellas energy, that Wolf of Wall Street kind of like charisma to them. Then there's the other movies he's done, like the side projects, like Silence, like even like Taxi Driver. They're like incomparable. So like I can't. It's hard for me to compare a lot of them.
True.
Wolf of Wall Street was a lot of fun, but my main issue with Wolf of Wall Street was I thought the pacing was really weird and all over the place. And I actually, strangely enough, thought it wasn't super well directed. Like, scene by scene, the directing was outstanding and everything was so tight. But as a whole, I thought it didn't really come together.
I thought it did. Like, we're getting too much into Wolf of Wall Street.
But, yeah.
But I think the pacing is off, but I think it's very purposeful considering it's such a drug-fueled movie.
Yeah, but to kind of bring it back to The Irishman, because The Wolf of Wall Street is also a very long movie. Mm-hmm. To me, by the end of The Wolf of Wall Street and after The Wolf of Wall Street, I was like, oh, okay. That was a really long movie. Where at the end of this, it was just like, it just felt like it all came together really well. And it sealed itself off with like a tick. Like, just, it all was this full, complete package. And the only criticism I really have for it is the weird aging effects.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess lack of women. But
again, I think that's a very purposeful decision. But the problem is, it's a pretty recurring theme in Scorsese movies.
Yeah.
Which is partly the subject matter he chooses and partly problematic.
Yeah.
But I can forgive it in the Irishman because it only made sense that way. And it felt purposeful.
Yeah.
Because, like, it seems like these characters didn't actually have a lot of respect for a lot of the women characters. Not, like, outwardly, but they're very dismissive of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Very relegated to the background in the movie and their lives. Not to get too political, but
yeah. So I guess much like the movie, just end on a sad note.
Oh.
Nah. Check out The Irishman. If you can fit it into your schedule, check it out.
It's a big recommendation from me as well.
Huge big recommend for me. I'm not sure yet if I think it's one of the best movies of the year. I haven't decided yet. I only watched it the other day.
Is it a runner-up?
I reckon it might be in the top 10, but I'll have to think about it. Like, I have to go back and remember. I think I really like it.
Even though I've been nitpicking for the whole podcast, I just want to say it is nitpicking.
Yeah.
I don't think there's huge major problems with this. Yeah. All it's the, really, really solid.
All the nitpicks just felt like, oh, the eyes were weird. The effects were weird.
Yeah.
This part was a bit strange. But then nothing actually impactful to the quality, really, of the story.
A movie that big is going to have some problems. And they're going to stand out a little bit. But overall,
shockingly little in this one, besides the visual effects.
Exactly.
Like, it's surprising to see such a long movie that's just so tight the whole way through.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. Anyways, I guess that was another episode of Watch Out a Movie Podcast.
Did we reach 3 hours?
If you play it at half speed.
Oh.
So if you're listening to this, make sure to play. I'm saying this at the end. Make sure to play it in 0.5 times speed for the accurate experience. In fact, you might even have to go lower than that because The Irishman goes for like 3.5 hours.
Mm.
So maybe go like 0.3 times speed.
I'm sure watching it at 0.25 speed is the optimal listening experience for this podcast. I'm sure it sounds great and very listenable.
Yeah. I would recommend watching The Irishman on 1.25 times speed, much like Naruto.
I recommend watching The Irishman very slowly over literal decades to get the full immersive experience, so it actually feels like 50 years passes.
Yeah, you should watch I say 10 minutes every year, watch 10 minutes. I think that'll get a good, that'll really hit. When the movie ends, you'll really feel it.
I agree.